Kurukshetra, in the place named Kurukshetra, Samaveta, assemble, Yoyotsavaha, desiring to fight, Mamakaha, my party, sons, Pandavaha, the sons of Pandu, Cha, and Eva, certainly, Kim, what, Akuravata, did they do, Sanjaya, O Sanjaya. Dhritarashtra said, O Sanjaya, after my sons and the sons of Pandu assembled in the place of pilgrimage at Kurukshetra, desiring to fight, what did they do? Purport, Bhagavad Gita is the widely read theistic science summarized in the Gita Mahatmya, glorification of the Gita. There it says that one should read Bhagavad Gita very scrutinizingly with the help of a person who is a devotee of Sri Krishna and try to understand it without personally motivated interpretations. The example of clear understanding is there in the Bhagavad Gita itself, in the way the teaching is understood by Arjuna, who heard the Gita directly from the Lord. If someone is fortunate enough to understand the Bhagavad Gita in that line of disciplic succession without motivated interpretation, then he surpasses all studies of Vedic wisdom and all scriptures of the world. One will find in the Bhagavad Gita all that is contained in other scriptures, but the reader will also find things which are not to be found elsewhere. That is the specific standard of the Gita. It is the perfect theistic science, because it is directly spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. The topics discussed by Dhritarashtra and Sanjaya, as described in the Mahabharata, form the basic principle for this great philosophy. It is understood that this philosophy evolved on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which is a sacred place of pilgrimage from the immemorial time of the Vedic age. It was spoken by the Lord when he was present personally on this planet for the guidance of mankind. The word Dharmakshetra, a place where religious rituals are performed, is significant because on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was present on the side of Arjuna. Dhritarashtra, the father of the Kurus, was highly doubtful about the possibility of his son's ultimate victory. In his doubt, he inquired from his secretary Sanjaya, what did they do? He was confident that both his sons and the sons of his younger brother Pandu were assembled in that field of Kurukshetra for a determined engagement of the war. Still, his inquiry is significant. He did not want a compromise between the cousins and brothers, and he wanted to be sure of the fate of his sons on the battlefield. Because the battle was arranged, Hare Krishna, just for your information and elucidation, Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, several times said that during class, when the deity curtains open and close, just sit and go on listening. Don't offer obeisances at that time. So you may kindly bear this in mind. He was confident that both his sons and the sons of his younger brother Pandu were assembled in that field of Kurukshetra for a determined engagement of the war. Still, his inquiry is significant. He did not want a compromise between the cousins and brothers, and he wanted to be sure of the fate of his sons on the battlefield. Because the battle was arranged to be fought at Kurukshetra, which is mentioned elsewhere in the Vedas as a place of worship, even for the denizens of heaven, Dhritarashtra became very fearful about the influence of the holy place on the outcome of the battle. He knew very well that this would influence Arjuna and the sons of Pandu favorably, because by nature they were all virtuous. Sanjaya was a student of Vyas, and therefore, by the mercy of Vyas, Sanjaya was able to envision the battlefield of Kurukshetra even while he was in the room of Dhritarashtra. And so Dhritarashtra asked him about the situation on the battlefield. Both the Pandavas and the sons of Dhritarashtra belong to the same family, but Dhritarashtra's mind is disclosed herein. He deliberately claimed only his sons as Kurus, and he separated the sons of Pandu from the family heritage. One can thus understand the specific position of Dhritarashtra in his relationship with his nephews, the sons of Pandu. As in the paddy field, the unnecessary plants are taken out, so it is expected from the very beginning of these topics that in the religious field of Kurukshetra, where the father of religion, Sri Krishna, was present, the unwanted plants like Dhritarashtra's son Duryodhana and others would be wiped out, and the thoroughly religious persons, headed by Yudhishthira, would be established by the Lord. This is the significance of the words Dharmakshetra and Kurukshetra, apart from their historical and Vedic importance. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Yilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadama Hyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Atafpar Kamalam Sri Guru Navaishnavam Sthah Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitam Sthah He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vantha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kipa Sindhubi Avacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Today, as most of you are probably aware, is Radhashtami, the appearance day of Srimati Radharani, who appeared at midday. Traditionally, the festival is completed by midday. Srila Prabhupada, once in Vrindavan, the place of Radharani, he celebrated Radhashtami in the morning and in the afternoon left to go out for his continued preaching. Srila Prabhupada was great devotee of Radharani. His father would every day invite sadhus to his home and ask them to bless his child that he could become a great devotee of Radharani. Of course, Srila Prabhupada, even without the blessing of so many ganja-smoking sadhus, was a great devotee of Radharani, but we find that Srila Prabhupada, his preaching was practical, to the point. Most of the time he spoke from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Even on Radhashtami, he didn't launch into a description of very intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna. He was quite reserved in this regard and very mercifully spoke to us at a level that we could levels that is suitable for us. Do you need a fan over there? Looks like Mataji is a bit hot. You can put a fan. It's probably, if that's a song sheet, it's probably better not to use that for fanning oneself. If it's just some piece of paper with nonsense written on it, then no problem. But anyway, put the fan, and it can cool off. So this morning we had a discussion of the greatness and mercy of Srimati Radharani and the Abhishek ceremony. And now it's back to our bread and butter, you could say, or chapatis and ghee, or day-to-day. Krishna consciousness is always above. The topics of Krishna consciousness are always above the topics of this material world. But at the same time, we have to approach those topics at a level that is suitable for our own present stage and advancement. Srila Prabhupada taught Bhagavad Gita as it is, always presenting Krishna as he is. I remember when I first saw this book, Bhagavad Gita as it is, I was surprised by the title. What is this as it is? I'd heard of Bhagavad Gita before, which for a Westerner in those days wasn't so common, wasn't totally uncommon, but it wasn't so common to have. I'd even read one version without, it didn't have any purport. I can't remember who it was by. I didn't understand anything at all about it. But the author, whoever it was, at the end wrote, "May Lord Sri Krishna bless you." And I remember that. So I thought, well, okay, that's good. Thank you. It was a much thinner version. There were no purports. So, but when I saw Bhagavad Gita as it is, I thought this was, rather presumptuous. So what's the point? I mean, if it's Bhagavad Gita, it's Bhagavad Gita. If it's not Bhagavad Gita, then why call it Bhagavad Gita? Why say Bhagavad Gita as it is? It's just like if you buy a packet of milk, it says milk. It doesn't have various adjectives. Real, genuine, non-artificial. It's milk, it's milk. Of course, milk nowadays, it's may have other things added to it, but generally on the packets there's not a lot of description to try to convince the customer that it really is milk and we're not cheating you, we haven't just put some chalk powder and mixed it with water and we're trying to sell it as milk. If it's milk, it's milk, it's milk. Okay, it's milk. So if it's Bhagavad Gita, it should be Bhagavad Gita. But that's the point that Prabhupada is making in titling his book Bhagavad Gita as it is, that most of the editions of Bhagavad Gita, they are Bhagavad Gita as it is not, or not as it is, or as it isn't. In other words, the presenters, they translate Bhagavad Gita, but they don't present Bhagavad Gita as Krishna presents it to Arjuna. The result of hearing or studying Bhagavad Gita is that one should get the same result that Arjuna got. Krishna spoke to Arjuna with a specific purpose, to give instruction to Arjuna how he should act and why he should act. Not just in that specific instance. Arjuna's dilemma was based on whether he should fight or not. And in answering this question, Lord Krishna gave a template for everyone in every situation, what they should do and why they should do what they should do. So the same result, the same effect should be there if we're actually taking the message of Bhagavad Gita. Now that doesn't mean that everyone should put on armor, jump on a chariot and bring a deity of Krishna and expect him to drive it and try and find out some Duryodhana. Even the most wild interpretations of Bhagavad Gita don't say that. But the statements of Arjuna and the actions of Arjuna, we should follow in the footsteps. What are these statements of Arjuna? Sarva metad ritang manye yang mang vadasi keshava. In the introduction to Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srila Prabhupada states that we should approach Bhagavad Gita, or we should hear Bhagavad Gita as Arjuna did. Arjuna said, Keshava, Krishna, everything you say to me, I accept it as truth. Generally, this word satya is used as truth. That's a well-known word. Ritam, rita. That's another term, similar term. Sarvametab, ritam, manye, I consider. Everything that you say to me, Krishna, I accept it as factual, it's truth. Now, this is the big mistake of the interpreters, is that they don't accept what Krishna says. Either they don't accept what Krishna says as being actually the truth. They take it as a collection of statements which are subject to personal interpretation. They don't accept Krishna as he is, as the guru of everyone. Srila Prabhupada quotes the Gita Mahatmya. There's another glorification of Krishna by Shankaracharya. We don't accept everything that Shankaracharya says, but this statement of his, Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru. He worships Krishna as Jagat Guru, the guru of the whole universe, the guru of everyone. So Krishna is not only the guru of Arjuna, but he's the guru of everyone. At the present time, there is Ritvigvad, there is a philosophy that will go directly to Srila Prabhupada and be initiated by him. There's no need of any other guru, and Srila Prabhupada is the Jagat Guru. Srila Prabhupada is the Jagat Guru, certainly, in as much as he represents Krishna. But then, if we go directly to Prabhupada, then why not go directly to Krishna? Why have anyone in between? Krishna is recognized as Jagat Guru. He's the guru of everyone. And guru is one who carries the same message. One who carries the same message as Krishna is also Jagat Guru. It's also because the message that Krishna gives is applicable to everybody. So Krishna, what he says, that is to be accepted not simply as a philosophical statement to be pondered upon, chewed upon, reassembled, diagnosed. No, this is the system of speculative philosophy by which one can never understand what is rita, what is the actual fact, what is reality. This is the Actually, this is the Western system of, there's not, or the Western system of philosophy, or the ascending process. That we may take what others have said in the past, but we take what we like from it, and what we consider to be correct, and mix it up with in a big pot, a big stew of various ideas, and come up with whatever we like. And that's changeable and flexible, and there's no ultimate truth. Everything's relative, and no one can fully know the truth. Have you heard all these things said before? That what makes you so sure that you're right? No one can fully know everything. No one's perfect. This approach is stated by Lord Krishna to be demoniac. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Asatyam apratishtam te jagadahura nishvaram aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama haitukam. He says that the demoniac persons who do not recognize that there is a supreme controller, they say there is no ultimate reality. There is no ultimate basis of everything. And then how is everything going on in the world? By chance. Aparaspara sambhutam. Everything is going on. There's no ultimate relationship between everything. Everything is simply acting by chance. And the world is going on impelled by lust. Lust is supreme. So theism, Srila Prabhupada in this purport which we read today, Srila Prabhupada uses this word theistic, theism. Bhagavad Gita, the first words of the purport, Bhagavad Gita is the widely read theistic science. So theism means, or it begins with, accepting the supreme controller. This is our day-to-day bread-and-butter philosophies. Not philosophy means here not just something concocted out of our minds, but the applying the God-given intelligence to understand Him as He presents Himself in Bhagavad Gita, as the acharyas, the self-realized students of Bhagavad Gita, have taught this. So, there is the supreme controller. We are controlled. This very basic point, which materialistic people do not want to accept, but which is, if we analyze it, it is indisputable. We are controlled. This amazing truth that Srila Prabhupada told again and again and again. We are controlled. It's a revelation to most people. America, the land of the free, the land of opportunity, all this phantasmagoria, or in American, in straightforward American, BS, about how this is the land of great opportunity. Well, there's the opportunity to think oneself very great before he falls down dead, like everyone else, all over the world and all over the universe. And without understanding Krishna, then it's useless. However big your car was, however big your bank balance was, however big your ego was, everyone has to die. Live life king size and die and become an ant or a dog. King of the ants. Well, actually, it's a queen. There's feminism for you. If you become the queen ant, queen of all. So there is the supreme controller. We are controlled. On Radhashtami, we analyze, or we discuss how the supreme controller is controlled by the love of his devotees, especially Srimati Radharani. This is a very advanced topic. Our day-to-day topic, or our basic topic, is to understand we are controlled. We are not the controller. There is a controller. The ultimate controller is Krishna. There are many controllers. The child is controlled by the parents, traditionally. Supposed to be. Everyone is controlled by the laws of the state. There are various demigods who control various functions. Speaking, eating, digesting. The movements of the planets. There are various demigods in charge of this. But the supreme controller is Krishna. Ishvara Paramaha Krishna. Sachidananda Vigraha. Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Krishna is the supreme controller. He is not a product of this material world. His form is eternal, blissful, composed of eternity, bliss and knowledge. Not composed in a way that we can analyze, in a not molecular structure, not exactly like that. It's difficult for us to understand because we have three-dimensional vision or three-dimensional cognition. But Krishna is ulangita tu vidhasima. He is beyond the three dimensions, the three limitations. In Vedic understanding, these three limitations are space, time and thought. We think in terms of space. We are now sitting in a converted warehouse in Hillsborough. In what is, it's, this land is presently designated as Hillsborough in the state of Oregon in the United States of America. Previously this area either had no name or it had another name. Before the certain people of European descent came and massacred all the Indians and declared it the land of the free, it had another name, and or didn't have a name. But anyway, we conceive of ourselves as being here. If someone gives us a phone call, please turn off your cell phone if it's on. That's not a joke. That's something should be said at the beginning of the class. Please turn your cell phones off. So if someone phones you and you say, where are you? I'm in the temple in the industrial area or whatever it is, Hillsborough, so we can place ourselves in space. Then if there's any court case, we're accused of, someone is accused of whatever it might be, of running around the streets naked, whatever, I know. I'm just trying to think of something. I don't know why that example came to mind. Maybe that's not even illegal. It's probably legal. Doing some terrible crime like slapping a dog or something like this. You were seen slapping a dog in downtown Portland at 6:52 on the... What's the date? 7th of September. You could say, no, I was in the warehouse in Hillsborough. There are so many witnesses. So we are in this particular space and time and thought. There is also the limit of thought. We can only conceive so far. Our ability to understand is limited by our ability to accept various concepts. Many people have difficulty accepting that the Supreme Lord has four arms. Or this, if you've seen this book, Sri Ishopanishad, at least the old editions, it used to have a picture of Lord Vishnu with all the snakes behind him. So I remember I was distributing this book on the streets of Dublin in Ireland, and one priest came up to me and he said, "This is Satan. This is coming from Satan, the snakes." So in Christian mythology, they talk of Hindu mythology, but in Christian mythology, there's a Satan and something to do with snakes. I'm not quite sure what the connection is, but maybe Satan takes the form of a snake sometimes. Is it? Does anyone know? We have any Satanists around here? Adam and Eve. Satan came in the form of a serpent, is the word they use in the English translation. And he induced Adam and Eve to eat an apple. And that is the cause of all the suffering of the human race ever since. This is the Christian mythology. It's pretty poor theology, but anyway. So we are limited by our concepts. Our understanding is limited by what we can imagine to be factual. Just like I've heard it said, that when explorers came from Africa back to England, and they recounted having seen giraffes, what we now call giraffes, animals so tall that they're taller than almost all the buildings in England at that time. And there are hippopotami, which is, in English understanding, is like a pig that really had too much, and overgrown pig. And more dangerous is a rhinoceros, because it's something like an overgrown pig, but it's more dangerous because it's got a horns, and if they charge you and you don't get out of the way, there's animals so tall that they're taller than almost all the buildings in England at that time. And there are hippopotami, which is, in English understanding, is like a pig that really had too much, and overgrown pig. And more dangerous is a rhinoceros, because it's something like an overgrown pig, but it's more dangerous because it's got a horns, and if they charge you and you don't get out of the way, then you don't come back from Africa to tell all the people. So the people in England, they said, well, it's very hot there in Africa, and probably too much sun has driven them mad. They've become crazy. It's gone to their head. Because there's no such animal. How can there be any animal like that? And there's dogs and cats and chickens and turkeys and geese and horses and cows and pigs, of course, and maybe sheep, and that's about it. What's this animal so tall that it can eat leaves from the top of a high tree? Obviously, these people are crazy. That's what they thought. They couldn't imagine that there could be any such animal. So Krishna is beyond the realm of... He's not limited by space, time and thought. This is a great difficulty people have to understand Krishna. They say, well, the Supreme cannot be a person, because a person means limited, just like we are limited. We are now at this particular time sitting here in this particular place. That means that that's a good alibi for us. If we're accused of some crime in Portland, half an hour's drive away from here, at the same time, on the same date, well, here's the evidence. We were here, we couldn't have been there. We can only be in one place at a time. So if our form, this form fits in a particular matrix that we carry it around with us wherever we go. So how can the Supreme be a person? That means he's limited. Form. If Krishna is here, Krishna is holding his hand like this. That means his hand is not here. It's only, if my hand is here, it's not here. If my body is here, it's not there. But Krishna is not limited. He is here, he is there, he is everywhere. Ito nrisimho parato nrisimho yato yato yami tato nrisimha bahi nrisimho hridaye nrisimho. We sing this, that he's here, he's there, everywhere I go, he's there, he's inside, he's outside. The Supreme Lord is not limited by space or time. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjana bhavishyani tabhutani. Mangtu Vedana Kastana. Lord Krishna declares that he knows everything past, present and future. But he, no one knows. So he is not limited. He's not limited by our conceptions. I don't believe that God has four hands. We declare. I don't believe that God this, that, so. So God has to come and bow down and say, oh, sorry, I'll give up my four hands and I only have two. Because, you know, you don't believe, oh, then I have to acquiesce to your belief. No. This is back to front. People ask us, do we believe in God? It's the wrong question. Does God believe in us? If he doesn't, we have a big problem. Because we're dependent on him. He's not dependent on us. Today I believe in God, so I'm giving him a pat on the head. Today, God, I'm allowing you to exist because I believe in you. But tomorrow, if I'm in a bad mood, then I won't believe in you anymore. So you better give me some good blessings so I get lots of money and no headaches, and the boss doesn't shout at me too much, and then I'll believe in you. So be on good behavior. So this is back to front. Do we believe in God? Rather, we have to understand him as he is. He is the supreme transcendental autocrat. He can do whatever he likes. Whatever he likes, that is good. We have no jurisdiction to judge him. Of course, whatever he does is, fortunately, it's all good. Even if we don't understand that. Some people, they don't believe in God. Because they think, well, if there's suffering in the world, that's proof that there's no God. Because if God is good, then he would make everything nice for us. Some years ago, The Week magazine, a nationally distributed magazine in India, they ran an article, Does God Exist or Not? As if they have any eligibility to discuss this. So they were asking different people, what do you think? As if God's subject to an opinion poll. So one of the persons interviewed was Ram. What's his name? Jet Malani, is it? Yeah. Politician, lawyer, maverick of sorts. So his comment was, "Well, I used to believe in God, but when I visited the earthquake." Affected area in Gujarat and saw the hands of the children sticking out from the rubble of their school building, innocent little children. They were sitting there studying, and all of a sudden there was an earthquake and then they were all killed. So then I doubted. God is all good, so why should he allow such things? Or not just allow, it's going on because of him. Not a blade of grass moves without God's, what's that, permission? Sanction. I think this was said by Mahatma Gandhi. Actually, you can look that up if you like. Put it on your list. I don't think it's a Vedic statement, but Srila Prabhupada also quoted that. And it's based on the Vedic statements. That the wind, because of fear of him, the wind blows, and so on. So, Why is that? Innocent children. What is the answer? Well, the answer is that, well, they're not so innocent. If we say this, people become very upset. No, they're innocent. They're just nice children. They didn't do any harm. But we have to see through the eye of Shastra that nothing happens without a cause. It may be from a previous, certainly statements that the wind, because of fear of him, the wind blows, and so on. So, why is that? Innocent children. What is the answer? Well, the answer is that, well, they're not so innocent. If we say this, people become very upset. No, they're innocent. They're just nice children. They didn't do any harm. But we have to see through the eye of Shastra that nothing happens without a cause. It may be from a previous, certainly in this case, it may be from a previous life, some sinful reaction that they had to suffer for. Sometimes children are born dead. They're growing in the womb, growing, and in childbirth they die. One disciple of mine, she was pregnant, and then she was told early in the pregnancy that the child has no kidneys, so he won't be able to survive outside the womb. So then the doctors are recommending abortion. So she asked me what to do. I said, no abortion. By the will of Krishna, this child has been sent to you, for there must be some purpose of his. So she nourished the child in the womb and chanted to the child in the womb. So the child in the womb heard the holy names of Krishna and was born and survived for 2 hours outside the womb and passed away. So who is to say? What is the plan of Krishna? That child had some fate. It was actually much more fortunate than so many children who are born with a silver spoon in their mouth, as the saying goes. And they have all material facilities to enjoy themselves, but they don't hear about Krishna. So this child was hearing about Krishna and then left this world. Who knows what is Krishna's plan? That some fate to not live very long, but on the other hand to have the fortune of hearing about Krishna and being born in the womb of a devotee. Sometimes children are born and they are, it's not very uncommon, they're mentally retarded or mentally, or whatever they call it, mentally challenged or something like that. They have different terms. They keep on changing. You keep on changing the euphemisms. So mentally retarded, but then if they're born in the home of a devotee, they're very fortunate because they can't do any sin, but they can take prasadam and they can hear the holy names of Krishna. So in that sense, they're very fortunate. It seems very cruel to say that the children were not innocent, but no one is innocent in this world. Children appear to be very innocent, but their material desires manifest gradually. Hitler was a little darling child on his mother's womb at one point, no doubt. We think of him as the worst person of the 20th century because due to him so many people were killed. But that's going on in America today. How many animals have been slaughtered in America today? Genocide. It's an ongoing policy. So we think innocent. Who is innocent? Who's going to vote for McLean? Who's going to vote for Obama? Who's going to vote for the cows? Doesn't matter. I vote, whoever's voted in, the cow slaughter will go on non-stop. Now, who is innocent? There are laws of nature. Purusha prakriti sto hi bhunte prakriti jan guran. Everyone is karanam guna sangosya sada sadyoni janmasu. We are in this material world, which is conducted under the modes of material nature, and we receive apparently better or worse situations due to our previous activities, due to the consciousness we have developed. Who is responsible? God is responsible. It's His fault. All the children died. It's His fault. No, it's our fault. Purusha sukha dukhanam bhoktritve hetu ruchyate. We are the cause of our own distress. That's why this Adam and Eve, it's like I said, it's very puerile theology. Trying to pass the buck onto, we don't want to blame God, so we blame Adam, and it's Adam's fault actually. And Adam will blame Eve. So it's very, very weak theology. It's our own fault. It's not God's fault that there's an earthquake. It's our fault. All our suffering in this material world, and it is all suffering, is caused by our own not accepting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not surrendering to Krishna. And that's why we have Bhagavad Gita as it is, because almost everyone who comments on Bhagavad Gita, they don't want to accept what Krishna says. They may accept it to some extent philosophically, but the implication of Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna is the Supreme Controller, we are to surrender to Him, we are the cause of our own distress in this material world. The message is very demanding. Krishna is the supreme autocrat. He's the supreme dictator. Everyone is under the control of Krishna. We cannot escape His control. Fortunately, it is a benevolent control. We're not meant for the earthquake stricken, birth, death, old age stricken, the material world. We're not meant for that. We're meant for the land of Vrindavan, the land of happiness. But forgetting Krishna, we create a situation whereby there must be suffering, because forgetting Krishna, our natural love for Krishna becomes perverted into envy of Krishna, envy of others, the desire to exploit others. And that creates a reaction. Our envious attitude and to others, and our exploitive activity towards others, creates karmic reactions. So Krishna, He's the ultimate cause of all causes, but the intermediate cause of our suffering is our own self. He gives us the choice. We can surrender to Him or not surrender to Him. So all these points have to be understood very carefully. That's why I don't tell a lot of stories on Radhashtami or any other day, because it's very valuable to hear that which will place our consciousness on the right track. Simply if we hear stories, we may think, well, it's very nice, it's a kind of entertainment, we can say, but we find that Srila Prabhupada always spoke in a manner delineating sambandha gyan. Who is Krishna? Who are we? What is our relationship with Him? Abhideya, how to act in that relationship, and prayojan, ultimately to come to the perfection of life. So we worship Srimati Radharani every day, every moment we should. It's not just for Radhashri, every day, every moment. But we can do that following in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, the great devotee of Srimati Radharani, by discussing and trying to understand and enter into the spirit of Bhagavad Gita as it is. Is there any question or comment, please? Yeah, please. Do we have another mic? No. All right. So please speak loudly. Please speak more loudly. Don't speak to me. Speak to the person at the back of the room. I'll hear it also then.
Maharaj, thank you very much for your class. You were mentioning about that...
Can you hear at the back? Can everyone hear?
You were mentioning that Krishna is the supreme controller and our daily meditation should be that we are controlled. So, although Maharaj, that is true, but we always feel that we are in control.
Yes, that is our disease. We always feel that we are in control. Therefore, we have to hear this again and again and again. That's why Srila Prabhupada spoke on these topics again and again and again. We have to hear. Shinvatam shadhaya nityam grinatascha shvati shitam. This we have to do. We have to hear with faith again and again, nityam, regularly, and endeavor to accept this and understand this. And then, kalena nati dirghena, Bhagavan vishate hriti. And then, within not a very long time, Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, will enter our heart or manifest Himself to us. So we have to hear regularly. It's not like some academic subject. You study, you get your exam, okay, now I understood it. You have to go on hearing. In the Bhakti Shastri courses, these are being conducted widely throughout the movement. So that's very good. But we shouldn't take this as like some academic subject. You study, okay, I studied, finished. Now I don't need to go back to that. And also, taking a Bhakti Shastri course, it's not a substitute for the standard program of regularly, daily hearing Shastra. It should be a supplement to that, not a substitute. It's required that we daily, regularly hear Shastra. That is the standard method of hearing for purification. So yeah, we have to go on hearing again and again. Bhakti means that they're just like this. Grinatas cha svacheshtitam. Svacheshta means one's own effort. We hear a lot about mercy, mercy, mercy. Yeah, mercy, yeah, we should beg for the mercy, but we have to make ourselves a suitable candidate for receiving that mercy. We have to show that we're eager to receive it. We have to make some effort to understand this philosophy very serious. Otherwise, if we take it very cheaply, then that's generally what goes on in the name of bhakti in India, that people without making much effort for self purification, they go to see some dramas in Vrindavan. They have these leela dramas, and everyone feels very nice, but there's no endeavor for purification by regularly hearing, regularly chanting, following sadhana and all these things. And people just say, well, it's just a matter of emotion. But they may make so many mistakes. Yesterday there was this drama where it began that, what was this, Sudama Brahmana he was living very simply and accepting whatever the Supreme Lord was able to give him. And that's atheism. That statement, which was at the beginning of the drama last night, is karma mimamsa atheism. I don't know if anyone else noticed. I noticed it. Whatever the Supreme Lord was able to give him means that the Supreme Lord is limited in his ability to give. He can only give according to what the person deserves. This is karma mimamsa philosophy, which is atheism. So it's better before writing plays that to become a disciple, to hear and understand. Otherwise, so many mistakes will come. Bhakti, really, it's a full-time job. It's not a part-time job. It's not a hobby. You have to do in this miserable modern so-called civilization, you have to do the best you can. But we should understand it's not a very conducive situation for cultivating bhakti. So one should hear and absorb very carefully before attempting to teach others. Writing plays is that's the work of great acharyas, actually. It's better, if we're going to have plays, just to take the words from Shastra rather than... Because you see, you may say, well, it's an innocent mistake, but it's a very serious mistake, actually. So I'm just giving that as an example. If we don't get it right, we get it wrong. So Srila Prabhupada was again and again and again speaking this, what we call basic philosophy, which often it seems nowadays people, we don't like to hear it, or it's just presumed that we all understand it and we'll all just hear leelas. But it certainly wasn't Srila Prabhupada's policy. He spoke the basic philosophy again and again, because, just like you say, theoretically we may understand, I am not the controller, but practically we feel like that. And the American way of life particularly it promotes the illusion that each individual is a great controller and a great individual, the rugged individual. It's nonsense. It's maya, it's illusion. But we feel like that. So we may have a Bhakti Shastri degree and we may have passed our tests and all this, but we have to hear again and again and again that we are not the supreme control. We are controlled. We are not the body. We are not the mind, the body, or the senses. We have to hear these things again and again and again. Then we can gradually come to that consciousness, because at every moment everything in the world is reinforcing the misconception that we are separate from Krishna, that we are not controlled, that we are the enjoyers of this world. So we have to hear these points again and again and again. And no doubt it's much more fun to hear some stories and this and that, and stories of Krishna are very nice, but we have to understand who Krishna is. Otherwise, the tendency is, when we're hearing about Krishna, who is that Krishna we're hearing of? Or what is our understanding of Krishna? Where do we learn about Krishna from? From the Mahabharata on TV? Or from Amar Chitra Katha, some cartoon books? Or some Mayavadi on Asta channel? Well, they don't talk about Krishna. If they do, it's all mixed up. So we have to hear from the devotees, from the Shastra, from Bhagavad Gita as it is, who is Krishna? Because if we don't understand who is Krishna, and we're hearing about Krishna, if we don't understand properly, that means we misunderstand. And therefore so many misunderstandings will come out. Sudama was living on whatever the Supreme Lord was able to give him. What is that? Then he's not the Supreme Lord. Then the Supreme Lord is himself. He's subservient to other laws. That's the implication of that statement. So, someone else, you wanted to say something? Yeah, please. Please talk to the people at the back.
Please accept my humble obeisances. Maharaj, mercifully, could you explain what kind of mood should a devotee or should a person cultivate in himself to be able to...
Can you hear this at the back? All right, you say, I'll repeat it. What mood should a devotee cultivate?
Should a person cultivate to be able to approach the seva potency of the Lord?
To be able to approach the seva potency of the Lord. Hladini Shakti. Yeah, Radharani, Hladini Shakti, that literally means the pleasure potency. She gives pleasure to Krishna, that's by her service. What mood should we cultivate? The mood of service. Service mood. Sivanmukh. Sivanmukhe hi jivado swayam eva spurati adha. Approach the mood of that I'm only here to serve. I didn't come to get anything for myself. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught this. Na dhanam na janam na sundarim. Kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishvare. Bhavatad bhakti rahai chukitvai. I haven't come asking for something for what I wrongly conceive to be myself. I wrongly conceive myself to be this space-time worm, this worm stuck here in this particular blip of time, in this particular blob of space, and I want money, women, followers. I haven't come like that. I've come understanding myself to be your servant, Krishna. So I'm simply asking for your service. This is the mood we should cultivate. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught that. Yeah, is there anything else? Yeah, please.
What is the difference between imitation and following?
What is the difference between imitation and following in the footsteps? Well, it's fairly clear from the language itself. Imitation means that you're pretending to be, that one is pretending to be something that he's not. Just like I've heard it said that some housewives from Delhi, they from time to time go to Govardhan and perform Govardhan Parikrama and call, as they're going around, they call out, I am a gopi, may gopi hoon. Then they go back to Delhi and, you know, it's life as usual, TV's on and they're chatting with their friends. So they're part-time gopis. But Krishna doesn't want part. There's no such thing as a part-time gopi. It's a eternal occupation. So that is imitation. Following in the footsteps means to accept the parampara of pure devotees and accept their instructions, which are suitable to us according to our present situation. Which means to follow the process of sadhana bhakti for gradual purification. That is the difference between imitation and following. Following in the footsteps. Not to artificially imagine oneself to be highly elevated, but to act according to one's eligibility. Adhika, this is, the word is used, adhika, this is a very important term, means our level of eligibility. In this world, those who are pure devotees, they're either in the category of madhyamadhika or uttamadhika. In this context, the madhyamadhikari, he lives in this world but is fully focused on Krishna. He understands, I'm the servant of Krishna. Uttamadhikari has transcended that stage but generally acts on that level also, for the instruction of others. And Kanishtha Adhikari is still very much in Maya, just starting, still in materialistic consciousness. Pure devotion begins with Madhyama Adhika, when one conceives of himself as a servant, not an enjoyer. So, Hare Krishna, is there anything else, please? Yes.
Maharaj, in your class, you were mentioning that in Bhagavad Gita, there is a shloka by Shankaracharya.
In Bhagavad Gita, there is a shloka by Shankaracharya. No, no. Well, it spoke. There is a verse, or there are several verses spoken by Shankaracharya. I quoted one famous line, Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru, Gurum. How does that begin? Devaki Paramananda. How does that begin? Kamsa Chanaramadanam. Vasudeva Sutang Devam. Kamsa Chanaramadanam. Devaki Paramanandam. Krishnam Vande Jagat Gurum. This is Shankaracharya's famous glorification of Krishna. He addresses Krishna as the son of Devaki and Vasudeva, the crusher of Kamsa and Chanara. No, Vasudeva Sutta, and Devaki Paramananda, who gives the highest pleasure to Devaki and who is the guru of everyone. And Vande, we offer prayers to him. So this is a prayer by Shankaracharya. It's not part of Bhagavad Gita specifically. We don't accept almost everything that Shankaracharya says, but if he says something good, which he does, we accept that. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna also, in jest, speaks mimamsa, karma mimamsa. We don't accept the teachings of Lord Buddha. Mostly, yes, we don't accept what he says. We don't reject everything that he says. This is why, actually, we need our acharyas, because someone might say, well, Krishna is saying karma mimamsa, so it must be correct. So we need our acharyas who have understood the speaks mimamsa, karma mimamsa. We don't accept the teachings of Lord Buddha. Mostly, yes, we don't accept what he says. We don't reject everything that he says. This is why, actually, we need our acharyas, because someone might say, well, Krishna is saying karma mimamsa, so it must be correct. So we need our acharyas who have understood the what is the actual import of Shastra. They can explain that to us. Otherwise, the tendency to misunderstand is very strong. Srila Prabhupada's books also need explaining. There's some controversy is going on over some statements in Prabhupada's books, which if understood out of context, then it may seem that Srila Prabhupada is some kind of monster. This statement that women like a man who is very expert in rape. So it sounds terrible. So that's only one statement, but they're all of Prabhupada's books. They could be misinterpreted, malinterpreted. So there should be a commentary. It's not that it's all misunderstandable, but that's parampara. In every generation, the disciples, they comment on and clarify for the present generation the teachings of the previous acharyas. Yeah, so what were you going to say? How do we know what is the actual message of Shastra? Yeah. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. How does that verse begin? Shrutayo vibhinna. Tarako pratishta shutiyo vibhinna nasa brishya yasya matangna bhinnam dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. How can we understand the Yaksha, Yaksha Rupi Yamaraj asked the same question to Yudhishthira. Well, how can we understand the truth? And the answer, Yudhishthira brought out the implications of the question by saying that, well, it's not simply by discussion or argumentation or logical analysis that nothing can be established, because someone says something and someone comes and says something else. And even the scriptures appear to say different things. And all the philosophers, they've all got different opinions. You're not even considered a philosopher unless you have a different opinion. So what is the actual essence of dharma? That is in the heart of the pure devotees. Therefore we should follow in the footsteps of the great devotees. Dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam. Guha, this word means heart. The more common meaning of the word is a cave. So some translators have said that the truth of dharma is found in caves. Emendatta, translate, maybe the first translator of Mahabharata into English. So he's not a Mahajana. He doesn't understand. You have to go to a cave and find some yogi, maybe he's sitting in a cave. Then you can understand. No, that's not the meaning. Then the question comes, who is a Mahajana? And it can go on like this. There'll be different. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has analyzed, and Prabhupada extrapolated that further. For the demons, Hiranyakashipu and Ravana, they are Mahajans. For the scientists, Einstein is a Mahajan. So for them, they're considered the truth. Einstein, he knows the truth. Einstein wasn't such a fool that he said that, but some people say that. So who will know? That requires mercy. Ultimately, it's the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Who knows, they know. Sounds like a Buddhist koan or something like this. But it's those who understand, they understand. E equals MC squared. Who understands? Those who understand, they understand. It's not that everyone can understand. Who understands Krishna? They understand. The mercy of the Supreme Lord. Who knows, they know. Sounds like a Buddhist koan or something like this. But it's those who understand, they understand. E equals MC squared. Who understands? Those who understand, they understand. It's not that everyone can understand. Who understands Krishna? They understand. Who understands? Well, Brahma, Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, Kumara, Kapilo, Manu, Prahlada, Janako, Bhishma, Baliya, Vyasakiya, Vayam. There are at least 12 people. Actually, there are many more, but 12 famous people. They understand. Brahma, Shiva, Narada, the Kumaras, well, there's 4 in one. Kapila, Swayambhuva Manu, Bali, Prahlada, Janak Maharaj, Bhishma, Shukadeva Goswami and Yamaraj, they understand. But then again, Brahma, he says, Jananta eva janantu, kimbahu chaname prabhu, manaso vachaso vapo, vaibhava tava gocharaha. He says, well, actually, Krishna, I don't understand you. So who understands? Brahma says that some people think they understand Krishna, but as far as I'm concerned, neither by my mental efforts, physical efforts, or verbal efforts can I understand you. So who understands Krishna? who understands Him as He presents Himself in Bhagavad Gita as the Supreme Controller. We are to serve Him. He is not a product of this material world. This much we can understand Him, but to understand His glories in full is not possible. Those who understand that the limitations of their ability to understand, they can begin to understand Krishna.